It's funny because this is like an LSU character who's clearly from Old Miss.
Yeah, it's really an Ole Miss character.
It's like Charleston, Louisiana. Yes.
That's, his name. Like... That's his name.
Yeah.
Charleston, Louisiana.
Like, he found...
Well, in the world is Charleston, Louisiana.
Kevin's face is like, I thought that was a bit much.
You learn nothing but Mid-South geography.
He's in your pantry eating cheddar straws right now.
In a hat exactly the size of Miss San Diego's.
I just love that Huey Long was like,
can you boys put the tugger in a little glass case for me? And wheel them around so they see we ain't fucking around down here.
Huey!
He'll be hot in there.
I don't give a fuck. You put that tiger in a box.
Huey Long, put him in a box. Sickest mixtape.
He'll run away.
Just hear this.
Then we'll have to buy another tiger.
We can get another tiger, put it in a fucking box. I'll need the band out to myself.
What if the tiger gets warm?
Let him sweat. He's from the jungle.
I saw him wearing a sweater. He'll be fine.
Governor Long, the environmentalists are complaining about the tiger box.
Send him 3 cases of whiskey and 3 shotgun shells. Tell him to choose one or fuck off. I run this bitch.
The Shutdown Fullcast. You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I'm going to do this, by the way, setting a timer right now, setting the stopwatch. I am going to introduce everyone on this podcast in not 2 minutes, but in 1 minute, starting now. Joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, Ryan Nanny. How we doing?
I have a quick question.
No, you don't.
Ryan,
and
no,
let's now talk. From. Now,
Ryan, what's your question?
Moving in order, we have Jason Kirk. Jason Kirk, say hi. How we doing?
Ryan, I have a
he's great
question
across the table
up on your
is
question,
Holly
but I'm gonna
Anderson.
Need to hear it first.
How we doing?
Hang on 1 second. I need to hear Ryan's question.
That's fine.
It's really, I
guess everybody,
it's more
including
of a
our producer Michael Serber. Michael
yeah.
Serber is
hang
joining
on,
us.
Serber,
you'll hear his
hang
time
on,
in strategically.
Serber, hang on.
Everyone
hang on
this podcast
this,
in
this doesn't count
35
until,
seconds.
Until Serber acknowledges he has been introduced.
Horseshit. Parliamentarianism. We are an anarchist
microphone, Jason. I think just do this.
Acknowledge transmission.
Now do this.
Acknowledge transmission.
Now do yeah. this.
Oh, Spencer,
all of the
unfortunately,
comments about
none of this
show
counts.
We're going to talk about how Holly's
now
talking all over everybody. That's all we're going to get.
Typical feminist podcast.
Can I ask my question now? Is this a place for a robust debate or not?
I wish you would.
Not everyone's entitled to a conversation, Ryan.
I'm going to ask this question to Jason now.
All right.
Jason, this is a real question that I've been like kicking around in my head for like at least 3 days. I'm not happy to admit this.
Wow.
Can a dog be Catholic?
Well, when did you baptize it?
specifically Catholic. Not just Christian.
Well, right.
Not just one of God's children. Catholic.
Oh, of course not. Yeah.
Did it choose to be baptized or not? Because some dogs jump in the lake on their own and then they're baptized.
Well, lots of Catholics don't choose to get baptized. They're, you know, it just happens when you're a little bitty thing.
I guess it's none of my business. I mean,
I guess what you need is a dog confirmation.
Yeah, at a certain age, so that age calculated for in dog years is like one or something.
Yeah, like two. Yeah,
are you saying
right.
It's too late for my dog to be Catholic?
Yeah, your dog needs to be Baptist, unfortunately. But that's right, the part of the world she hails from. So,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, like because you don't want adult dog converts; they're so weird. You know, like dogs who are born Catholic, that's how Catholicism works. You're born Catholic. Like, yeah, they're fine. Like they go around, they see a dog who was also born Catholic, and they both compete to talk about who goes to church the least, and whoever does, they're the coolest dog Catholic.
Sure.
Whereas, like, a dog who's two and converts to Catholicism, they're the types who are going to get online and say, like, we need to do another crusade, and all the other dog Catholics are wrong because of this rule from the year 900, and yeah.
Or is it possible that there are different sacraments for it? Like, if we're saying that the basic split here is between, like, faith and acts, I don't know what a dog's faith is, so I couldn't tell you, like, oh, this dog is not Presbyterian or Methodist or Baptist or whatever, right?
Right. I think dogs with no object permanence are actually cut out really well for mm-hmm. a faith-based religion, you mm-hmm. know? Because it's like, yeah. we leave our house and our dogs are
my whole
are
life
like,
is faith.
I believe dogs, they'll come back.
Right.
A lot of dogs really start out Presbyterian if you think about it.
How so?
But
like, that's their baseline.
Can you expand on that?
Well, they're Scottish.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, there's Scottish Terriers. Scottish Terriers are all Calvinists, it's true. Yeah.
No, but they, I'm talking about, like, I'm thinking about pack hierarchy specifically, right?
Yeah.
That's very Presbytery. See?
I think,
But, like, is there dog confession?
I think small dogs are Presbyterian, right? When you roll up on a small dog, it's like, you have always been bad. I've decided it. You were born bad. You're going to die bad. There's nothing you can do about it unless you've been chosen to not be bad, right? Whereas big dogs are all universalists. Big dogs don't care. They're not threatened by anything. Hey, what's up, man? You're cool. Right. Can't wait to go to heaven with you. Whatever you believe. I don't care. I'm a big dog.
So let me just take this back to this is intertwined with the theological issue of dogs being recognized as having souls or not.
Yeah.
The Kirk Ferentz of the contemporary Catholic Church, and by contemporary I mean like the last 300 years because they got a history, is Pope Pius IX, who ruled forever in the 19th century and insisted that dogs had no souls. Like, this is what this dude had to do as a job. He would roll into the office, get himself some espresso, and be like, dogs have no souls. Right. My work is done.
A fantastic pope.
And not just that, but
that'd
like Shirley spent 2 years like, oh, I got another expense report. Sorry.
I need a conclave. Hold on. I need a conclave. Can you get everyone here for an entire summer?
I'm on the phone with heaven. Okay, God,
yeah.
I'm going to kill this dog right now. You let me know if he shows up.
Nothing? Nothing? Still? Hang on. I'll call back tomorrow.
Let me check with Satan. Nothing there either.
You say he's buffering still? Clearly working off some sins. Probably owes me money for those sins.
If I were Pope, I'd go even further, and I'd say it's only parakeets in heaven. All other pets.
God,
soulless.
That's going to suck.
It's so squawky and squeaky.
And so smelly.
Smelly.
It smells so weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
This sucks. It's better than ferret heaven. God, can you imagine?
Oh, Jesus.
Ferret heaven.
But in heaven,
it sounds like a fucking playing. Bong all day.
Yeah. In heaven, all the parakeets sound like Ghostface Killa. That's the even better part.
That's pretty cool. You go insane in like 8 minutes. A billion Ghostface Killas singing the praises for all eternity. Damn.
With really obscure papal shout outs, right?
The living creatures around the throne that are like 85 animals at once.
Yep.
That is kind of Ghostface's vocabulary, so
yes.
It lines up.
This is from the Book of Manicotti.
Welcome to heaven. Please proceed to our mixer at the Ghostface Killer Petting Zoo.
Yeah, as the prophet Derek said. Yeah.
Were you doing a voice just then?
Like a slight New York voice.
Yeah.
Just a little hint.
It was okay.
We'll go Action Bronson is what that was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ghostface and Action Bronson just debating for all eternity.
Just saying things like, are cocaine nose holes acceptable?
I didn't fear hell when this episode started, and I'm beginning to.
That was a mistake on you, frankly.
I didn't anticipate hell.
Is the official stance of the Catholic Church still that dogs don't have souls?
No, this started to weaken when I think it was Pope Paul IV told a child that they would see their dog again in heaven, because obviously you're the Pope and the kid's like, am I going to see my dog?
And then, of course,
just
made
died
a bunch of people super fucking angry.
It is a soft Pope. Only my priest. Now, Father Arnold back at Franklin Catholic Church, he would have been like, St. Phillips would have been like, no, man, your dog, that doesn't exist anymore.
This is all better than Calvinism.
Would have done that. Yeah.
All this is better Calvinism. Calvinism, you're like, is my baby brother have a soul? Yeah, it's going to hell. Right? All of this is better than Calvinism.
Your baby brother wouldn't have died before being baptized if he didn't want it enough.
My dad, by the way.
Oh, man. Fox Sports 1 would have had a field day in these times.
My dad, by the way, this was like my priest growing up. And my dad, when I was much older, was like, oh, hey, do you remember Father Arnold? And I looked at him and he looked at me and I was like, no. And Father Arnold goes, no. Even though we damn well remembered each other. And I respected him so much for that.
It's better this way.
Yeah. No, I don't remember you.
Well, because you weren't swole when he was mean to you.
That's right. Now I can beat his ass. Come on, Father. Let's go.
So,
God, you made the religious sequel to Hot Rod.
I did. Till I could beat up my priest.
Hot Rod is quite religious, I think. I think there are all sorts of allegories.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, but the current thinking has been expanded upon by Pope Francis.
Wait, does that mean I can base a church on Danny McBride's character in Hot Rod? Because yes, I would.
I would, same. Yes. Yeah.
That's Righteous Gemstones, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there are apostles, right?
He needs more green tea.
Yeah.
It's the main
thing. Little more green
tea. Listen, I've never seen my personality represented on screen before until Danny McBride showed up in that movie.
So, but Pope Francis expanded upon this in 2014 by saying that the design of salvation would extend to all creation. So that
I knew that having a pope named Frankie was going to make this a more relaxed and comfortable denomination.
Well, I mean, you know, he's Francis of Assisi's
name. It's Pope Frankie.
He's going to be quite friendly toward the dogs, right?
Guy names himself after Francis. He's going to like animals more than he likes people, and he's going to like people a lot. Francis of Assisi, of course, the legend is that he took a reference to, like, preach the gospel to the whole world. He took it literally, stood outside and preached to birds.
Yeah.
So that's the namesake here.
So even like the weird fish at the bottom of the ocean with tardigrades, like lantern jaws and shit. Yeah.
We got to come to me, ye beetles. God made those first, man. If anything, you got to preach to those first.
Wait, yeah. Those were first?
He made the creatures of the sea first.
It starts with the water, just like evolution, because evolution is in Genesis 1.
You think they just dropped a gamer? Genesis, and God created a gamer. Some dude in a chair. It's like sick.
Right. We had to build to the pinnacle of
creation. Pinnacle of creation, the gamer.
Right.
All of our resources for millions of years have created the gamer.
Look, I know.
I think of Jesus somewhere on AirPods that fit and never fought out, just nodding and being like, these guys get it.
Yeah, they got it, man.
I know Burt Reynolds has already weighed in on this, but is the implication of Pope Francis' statement there that all dogs go to heaven?
I think it's that the prospect of salvation will eventually extend to all dogs. However,
because now, see, this is why it's cleaner to just say dogs don't have souls. Because if you say dogs do have souls, you either have to say, and they all go to heaven, or some of them don't, and now you have to explain why.
You are the one who has to invent the idea of a bad dog, you asshole. How about this? There are no souls. There is one soul, and we all share elements of it. There is no heaven. There is a new creation, right? And dogs are part of it.
Vacation Buddhist school.
This is the actual story, by the way.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I would also, there is an extension, by the way, a point of controversy in this New York Times article about whether dogs do go to heaven.
This is the first time hearing about an article.
Is the extension, well, does this extend to other animals? So, for instance, if I eat a pig, do I later meet that pig that I ate in heaven? And he's like, it's all good.
Why is the pig Anthony Anderson? What are you doing?
There was probably a process of atonement. I think the pig gets to eat part of you, probably.
Yeah, take a bite. It's fine.
I'm truffled.
Also, if Ghostface,
I taste like you.
If Ghostface and Action Bronson are Heaven's rappers, I think Hell's rappers clearly Big Sean.
Yeah, Big Sean and Silk the Shocker, right?
Oh, like, God.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Look, this guy's 8 beats behind the beat.
So far. And then falling further for all eternity.
How did he get a deal? A few times
a day, he's on beat while 300,000 bars behind.
Wait. So if hell is not eternal torment, but instead just the absence of God, does he represent the fall? Are you falling further and further away from God forever?
From God's light, yes.
With
God
his
is the beat.
God is the beat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at any time, as C.S. Lewis would say, at any time you can choose to get on beat, this will be difficult for you because you will have to make that choice. Mm-hmm. If you're Big Sean, you will refuse this for all eternity.
That's what the Go-Go song We Got the Beat is about. We have the love and the light of Jesus Christ in our lives.
Right.
Yeah, so they played that at my Nana's funeral.
All the rappers who remain.
In a minor key or just straight up?
Straight up.
Oh, it's not a dirge.
All the main tier, rappers in hell go. It's Chance the Rapper.
Spencer,
Chance the
Rapper is definitely in hell.
Oh, that's going to hurt Chance's feelings really bad.
I know it will.
Yeah.
Is that the like just sat on a pitchfork noise?
Yeah, the sat on a pitchfork noise. Yeah.
Chance's mom's going to call your boss.
Spencer, what song do you want us to play when we lower you into the grave?
Oh, boy.
You won't be dead, so make sure it's something you'll enjoy.
El Sonidito.
Annoying to the bitter fucking end.
And then I want you to stop for a second, and when he says "Buenísima," then you don't say then keep lowering, right?
How deep do you think your grave is?
You better make go. You better put me 18 feet down.
We're lowering you into a well.
Yeah,
it's the only way to be sure.
It's the only way to be sure. That's what I'm saying.
The echo, the speaker's going down with you, and the echo is resounding up the well.
Pouring concrete onto the coffin.
Whoops,
right?
Summoned Cthulhu. Damn it. Yep.
At least he's down there now. You two get along.
He's Spencer's roommate.
Oh, no.
This fucking guy. Won't stop microwaving ramen.
Is there one animal that categorically we can just say, like, none of them go to heaven? None.
Mosquitoes.
It's going to take mosquitoes a while to get there.
Swans.
Mosquitoes have a lot to work through.
Swans don't want to be there. Swans are totally, hell was full, so I came back.
Yep.
That's swans already, so they don't want anything to do with heaven.
Fuck a swan.
Maybe swans are like some sort of alien robot.
That is the Untitled Goose Game mod we need.
Swans?
Hell mode.
I was going to say, I think Swan Game is actually just like Half-Life.
It's just a duck with a gun.
Yeah. I think Swan Goose Game Hell Mode is the Diablo Cal level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think swans, mosquitoes, jellyfish.
Jellyfish have real big purgatory vibes.
Jellyfish are angels, according to, spoiler alert, the Jordan Peele movie.
Huh.
Did y'all not see the latest one?
No.
Okay. Well,
that's okay. Man, it's fine.
Let me tell you what. That's proof that I know.
I have
Jordan
the time. I can't get mad at you. I have the
Final Fantasy jellyfish are angel aliens.
Okay.
It's a great movie.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with that. That's
Neon
also
Genesis
again.
Evangelion is real. That is
the documentary.
Latest. Yeah.
That's what I want to see the Mask Big Ten coaches about.
It's worth it for like, and it's worth sitting through all of the boring answers just to get to the one where
Kirk Ferentz just sort of
we're just like rolling his hands like, and like one of them is going to have a here's the situation moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
it's
let's
Ryan
be real,
Day.
We all know it's Day. It's Jeff Brom.
Oh, okay.
I could see it with Ryan Day, and that's the nicest thing I've ever said about someone associated with Ohio State football. But yeah, like one of them is his eyes are just going to light up. And he's going to have hours and hours of opinions. And they're going to be specific.
What? Anime. Specific.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, anime.
Yeah. Ooh, 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 ooh.
See, I think this is what I was saying. I think it's worth asking these stupid, the stupid pop culture questions at Media Days because you're going to get a bunch of flat, boring, well, I don't know about that interest. But you're always, you every once in a while, you'll get one guy who just absolutely clicks and vibes to it, and that makes all the rest of it worthwhile.
I'm going to go Brom because I don't know if you can get hired at Purdue without anime knowledge.
It doesn't seem possible, does it?
Please name your favorite anime dog.
Yeah, just like I'll bait him out with code. I'll be like, would you consider this past season with Purdue's football a bizarre adventure, Coach Brom? And he'll
he's
be like,
it. He's just fighting.
He's kind of squinting at you.
It's like
it's the try not to rock challenge.
Yeah, it is. Finally, it'd be like, season 4 was my favorite. I know other people don't like it, but
gotta look cool. Jocks can see this.
Yeah.
JoJo.
What's your favorite joke? Now I'm going to do it. I'm going to go to Big Ten Media Days, and I'm only going to ask one question. I'm going to walk up. I'm going to ask Jeff Brom what his favorite JoJo's Bizarre Adventure theme song is.
It's their fault for credentialing us.
And he's going to have an answer. He's going to absolutely have an answer.
Betty enough.
So this week
it is not enough.
Yeah,
it's summer. Major League Baseball's in full swing, and there's one app for you if you want last minute deals on Major League Baseball games, and that's GameTime.co. That's right, GameTime.co. I'm looking at the app right now, and I'm picking out America's team, really, the Kansas City Royals. And at Kauffman Stadium, just in a couple days, there's tickets available for $16. And then, well, I don't want to up the stakes too much here, but let's go to next week. It looks like they're playing the Chicago White Sox. There are tickets available right now for $3. You could see a Major League Baseball game in Chicago for $3. What stadium, you ask? Not important. It's in Chicago. But GameTime.co is not just for Major League Baseball games, even though you can get great deals for that. You can also get great deals for concerts, football games. Those are going to be coming up pretty soon. You can find them on GameTime.co. I use GameTime.co to purchase last-minute tickets for an Olivia Rodrigo concert. Tyler Childers did not show up at mine. That would have been awesome, but it was awesome nonetheless. And GameTime.co made it super easy. I got my parking through GameTime.co, and I got great tickets for my wife and I. GameTime.co made all of that so easy and one of the greatest concert experiences I've ever had in my entire life. And I'll be using them again. In fact, I'm seeing a little bit called The Beaches in late September. And where did I get my ticket? That's right. Even ahead of time. I didn't wait till the last minute because GameTime.co has you covered then as well. That's what I love about it. Whenever I want to get a ticket for an event, whether I heard about it months before and procrastinated to no end and have left myself in a lurch, you can save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, anything else. So take the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets with GameTime. You can download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code FULLCAST for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code FULLCAST for $20 off. Download GameTime today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
I did want to talk about today, all of, the grand theory of dynastic football.
I should point out that the rest of us declined. Are skeptical of this.
I know you're very at the outset. You're very, very skeptical of this. Okay. But, and at the risk of sort of explaining something, I want to talk about why Oklahoma's so bad, because they're fucking awful. Mm-hmm. Like they're butt right now.
Is it beyond just hiring Ted Roof? Are there things worse than that?
Doing that on purpose is enough of an indictment out of the gate. But I think they had enough talent that. For a minute, at least, I was like, "Oh, maybe he can't move them backwards."
Mm. He can't move anything backwards.
That. Yeah,
I mean that seems to be one very, very large, prominent, and obvious reason why. Because, like, why do teams go bad? You know, they go bad because of like 8 different things. And I think, like, the biggest one we could all agree is when the school doesn't want to have football or doesn't care about being good at football. Like, that's really Miami's historical problem when they're not really great, is that the school is somewhat embarrassed of the football program because of their desire to be a legitimate athletic institution that is also allied with Uncle Luke. Like, they are absolutely uncomfortable with football on some level and sort of still are, even though they've spent a lot more money on it. So that's step one. Step one is you have to, as an institution, start rejecting football to get real bad. Oklahoma has not done that. Oklahoma has no shame about football.
Oklahoma is not going to do that.
No. It's sort of part of the brand and core identity at this point, right?
If Nebraska has not done that, Oklahoma is at least 20-something years away from doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Nebraska's novel for and tragic for wanting to be really good at football. Like, really, at a DNA level, wanting to be good at football, and just
but
not.
It's like the harder they bear down on it, the worse it gets.
it's like a 5'5 guy who wants to play in the NBA. You're like,
I would like to note for the listeners, it's incredibly cruel that we started this with, like, what's wrong with Oklahoma, and it has somehow veered into, why is Nebraska so fucked up?
This is way off topic.
There's no safe space.
Nebraska's like, all right, we're going to fire our native son, perfect golden boy, perfect fit, quote fingers over all that, head coach, so we can hire Lance Leopold from Kansas. And Wisconsin's like, actually, we're going to spend $10 million to hire Lance Leopold from Kansas. Anyway, Oklahoma.
Yeah. So Oklahoma, that is not their particular tragedy. They don't have the Nebraska thing where we'd like to be really good at football, but, you know, circumstantially, resource-wise, it's just not happening. Nope. They're probably going to be good at football again. Like, I feel pretty confident that institutionally they have that commitment. This is definitely more one of those, like, Alabama-style collapses where everything goes wrong, but behind the scenes there will be beheadings, draggings, and enough reorganization to where they will frog march themselves forward to excellence if it kills them. So, like, it feels like that's going to happen.
Well, the thing they're a whole lot closer to major Texas population centers than Nebraska is.
That is correct. They're still close to a lot of really good talent. They have a proven ability to get that in the current era, like some schools that lost Prop 48 and the ability to manipulate the roster or take people who were already schooled in their offense because it was a unique offense. I'm talking about Nebraska again, sorry, but they're such a good case study.
Spencer, what's Prop 48?
Prop 48 was an academic exemption rule in the NCAA code that allowed you to take people who might not fit your admissions requirements in the name of football excellence.
Were these known by any other name that we might be familiar with?
Actually, no, you're going to have to tell me.
Oh, I thought it was the partial qualifier rule.
Partial qualifier, yeah.
I was just trying to bring out the audience along, sorry.
Yeah.
That was my mistake, and I won't do it again.
No, that was good. So they don't have that. Oklahoma's still going to have a pipeline. I feel like they've got that. But what have they messed up? Like, what happened to them? What have they messed up? It sort of, to me, started in part with talent on hand and the nature of the team. Okay, you had a very charismatic offensive mind as head coach who, yes, continued to paper over a lot of their defensive struggles by scoring more points. It's a neat trick. If you're going to allow 38 points a game, score 41. That's a real great way to go ahead and make up for that. And able to do that with a series of...
I don't even know if I would call that a trick.
Well, yeah, it's just...
Like, it's not like he decided to have them score that many points because they had defensive struggles.
Right. But they were at least able to play enough defense and score enough points so that that was a functional model of football.
Yeah.
Right? So he leaves. And when Lincoln Riley leaves, on top of that, he takes a significant amount of talent, including Caleb Williams, the quarterback, with him to Oklahoma. Fine. Well, it's the transfer market. I'm sorry, to USC from Oklahoma. Yes?
Nothing. I was just waiting.
Yeah. So what's the first thing that people screw up when you have this kind of short-term decline, right? Long-term decline, we're talking like 5-10 years when you're just butt forever, right? Like Florida, for instance, when you make three bad hires and you settle into a kind of pleasant mediocrity, not total disaster, right? Or when you're Nebraska and you do this for 20 years and you can't figure
Always
out what's
Nebraska.
Wrong and you try everything. Or Miami.
Nebraska fans, I just want you to know that we know that there are other programs who have fallen off. And
three of us know that.
Unfortunately, they're not interesting.
But for some reason, always Nebraska.
Sorry, Nebraska. You are fascinating.
We love your funeral potatoes.
They are fascinating. So what do you do in the short term to make things so bad? Well,
panic.
You do panic.
It's time to. I think
overcorrect.
Yeah,
overcorrect. But from what mistakes? Well, one is hiring. One is you make bad hires.
Yes.
Right? You make bad hires and you hire bad coordinators. You hire people who aren't going to do the job and who are a bad fit for the kind of football you want to play. They're not a compliment to your complimentary form of football. Ted Roof is that dude. Jason?
What are the styles of football that Ted Roof compliments?
I have a series.
There aren't many.
Yeah.
First of all.
Thank you for immediately following me to that question.
Like Cam Newton. If Cam Newton is on the other offense, you have an offense that can overcome Ted Roof. Otherwise, you're fucked.
That is correct. Can I note that his Wikipedia page praises him for his highly aggressive defenses?
Huh?
False. Doubt.
Anybody can edit
citation
Wikipedia.
Needed,
it's fine. It's fine.
They're not good at anything. Like, aggressive means you get a lot of sacks and you give up a lot of touchdowns. And, like, pew, pew, but, like, no, they don't do anything.
I keep, and it's one of those crazy-making questions because, you know, you hear a lot, well, why does this guy keep getting hired? No, really, we're asking, why does this guy keep getting hired? He can't be that good of a hang.
Yeah, I mean, I really think, like, other coaches just really like him. Like, he was like a kind of a mentor type figure for a little bit for Venables at Clemson. And, like, other coaches think he's cool.
Like, is he the guy who, like, always shows up with ice to the part? Is this just a lesson to always be the guy who brings ice?
By the way, like, I think this might inadvertently pay him a compliment because by being
it's inadvertent, or all right if it's a compliment.
By being so many different places and keeping a job for so very long, despite no obvious success. Like, if you look, his greatest achievement is like, oh, well, I happened to be on Auburn at a time when Cam Newton was there. Mm-hmm. And when I had Nick Fairley on my defensive line. That's, I was there in the building. Like, you're going to hire him so that maybe there's some sort of law of attraction to where another Cam Newton just happens to walk in the building. On the other side of the ball, you have nothing to do with.
Right.
Right.
His, I think one actually good defense was Penn State, the, like, Bill O'Brien era. It was like, it's a total aberration. It's like, no one should have had a good defense with that. Somehow he did. And other than that, it's dick fucking nothing.
He won 4 games in 4 years as head coach at Duke, which I will state is bad even for Duke football. Mm-hmm. That's pretty deplorable, even at Duke.
3 straight 0-8 0-8 in conference seasons.
Yeah, it just
it's wild to me. Like whenever like once a year or so, you look up and like, wow, that team's getting torched. Who's the defensive coordinator there? Oh, I should have guessed. It's Ted Roof. And like you post it, and then like younger sports fans are like, I know a song about a roof being on fire. I will make the joke, and it's like, that is a good joke. Welcome aboard. People have been making it for literally decades. That's how bad this guy is. Like, right? like not to say, oh, you should have known this already. It's just like, yes, welcome. More. Keep it coming. It's a yearly tradition.
But Ted Roof is also one of 3 defensive coordinators on this staff.
There's probably another problem there.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
When you say 3 defensive coordinators, what do you mean?
I mean that if you look at the coaching staff list on Oklahoma's football website, Ted Roof's title is defensive coordinator / linebackers. Todd Bates is associate head coach / co-defensive coordinator / run defense / defensive tackles.
Jesus.
And Jay Valai is co-defensive coordinator / pass defense / cornerbacks and nickelbacks.
Okay. And the head coach is also a defensive coordinator by trade.
Which I thought I thought that they might have put like former defensive coordinators of other programs into new roles, but no, they did this thing.
Okay. So Ted Roof is the defensive, he's the only one without the co-title, but he only coaches the linebackers and he doesn't run the run or pass it. Like, I don't understand.
Like, I'm telling you,
I'm sure there is some sort of distribution of labor here, but it does not make sense just based on the titles.
My offer is this. What if he's just cool?
Sure.
Like, yeah. Well, he might just be the coolest dude.
Sure. You're like,
Ted fucking man, parties, man. I don't know.
It's like, does he just pull up every other day in his awesome vintage truck?
Does he bake?
Yeah, with a thing of cupcakes. He's like, well, wife kicked me out again. I'm in Dutch with the old lady. I'm going to be sleeping on the couch. Come in, old Ted.
Ted Roof, your new title is Star Crunch Coordinator. You got to bring him. We love him.
But yeah, that's my question, because there's no other reason. So you've hired a guy who by the way may have one purpose here. He's a convenient scapegoat. Like that must obviously be it. We'll ditch him, because if you do fire him, you haven't really lost like one of your chief recruiters. You haven't lost one of the guys who's keeping the talent in. You haven't lost anyone who's going to badmouth you, because Ted's a great guy. Ted's gonna be like, cool. Sure. I'm just gonna go get Star Crunches at another school.
Yeah.
Ted knows why he's here. Ted's here to be jettisoned when need be.
I am also just now realizing that Oklahoma has hired 3 defensive coordinators, all who work under Brent Venables.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Like,
so that Brent can focus on the offense,
scoring lots of points.
It's not and that defense that Venables runs, extremely complex. Like, it is a complex defense. It is not one that, you know, hey, we're gonna roll out. It's not Iowa's defense, and I say that as a compliment to Iowa, because they're like, what are you gonna do? Well, I'm gonna play cover 3 and beat your ass. Like,
we're gonna do what we did in 2002. Why?
Yeah, and we're just gonna do the shit out of it, right? That's pretty much what they do. Venable's defense is pretty complex. The idea of that complex defense being taught by an additionally complex management structure, to me, screams of like disastrous management courses where they're like, yes, it's like the Six Sigma defense, right? It's a very complex system, but it will solve everything. It will only take 8 years and bankrupting this company to install.
Yeah.
This pass rush could have been an email. God damn it.
Yes. You got four different guys screaming different things at you about the defense rate doing something different on every play.
That sounds fun.
Which, you know, seems like that seems like fun. It also seems like absolute. I mean, can you imagine being a player on this and watching this happen and being like, I think you could probably do this? Because you've had moments when you were younger, when you were looking at like structures of authority where you go, oh, I think you're doing this wrong. Like players on this team have to be like, what? Really? That's how you decided to do it?
Yeah.
Like, three different dudes?
Not to be elitist, but we're all four stars and Kansas State is all one stars. So we could probably just sort of line up and run straight forward. And
this is also not the side of the ball where they had a coach like quit / fired at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, what Cale
Gundy
there?
Was an assistant on the
story?
Offensive side, right? It was kind of convoluted, as I recall.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what happened there. Totally, but
it was one of those where like every time more information came out, it was like, hold on, what word was said? How many times? Why does this get like the two chains tweet?
Oh, that, yeah.
The Gundy, right?
Yeah, yeah. Cale Gundy.
Yes, Cale Gundy, who allegedly
a key part
used
of any Pizza Hut buffet.
Superfood Gundy.
The world's largest purveyor of kale pizza.
But okay, so
that's
all
not
right.
What purveyor means?
Is that
bad?
True?
Purchaser, acquirer.
Yes, acquirer. Yeah, that's what. It, yeah, no.
Purveyor is the other side, isn't it?
Purveyor is the other side. Sorry.
No, I meant is Pizza Hut the largest?
Oh, they used to be.
Oh, yeah, for a while they were. When the buffets awesome. Were the thing. Yeah.
No wonder I'm so healthy.
Yeah.
Sorry if you can't keep up with me. I've just been eating a lot of Pizza Hut.
Superfood, all right. I think so. I've always thought so. When I was six, I thought so, and still do.
Eight Kenyan marathoners behind me, and I'm like, it's the Hut, baby. It's the Hut. It's what keeps me strong in mile 25.
Not going to be out pizza.
Man, if you want to keep up with me, you better book it.
These are bucket loads, baby.
Just me and Craig Robinson.
I want that tracksuit. I want that tracksuit so goddamn badly that he is wearing in these ads. Congratulations to Craig Robinson for your Pizza Hut money. Give me the tracksuit. Give it to me.
So
but Oklahoma has made bad hires before. So,
mm-hmm.
So they don't know how to handle this.
Like, yes. Especially like Oklahoma has had a history of, oh man, this is not the defense is a problem. I can think of at least three other hires.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
How many of those hires are Mike's students?
Like, this is not a new problem, is I guess what I'm saying.
Counting
so why
Mike
is it
Stoops
so much
promotions.
Worse now? Right.
Well, it's not exactly. I mean, like, look at what they've done in the past, okay? Yeah. Because this is a program that has had very little turnover over the past 70 years.
Let's compare them to Nebraska in that regard. Just no.
They were very similar for a while.
For a while.
Then
until
what?
This millennium.
And then a man named Bill came along.
Their interims are very, very short. Like, they have Bud Wilkinson. Mm-hmm. Bud Wilkinson goes like 1947 to 1963. Steady as a rock. Some of the greatest, you know, like, statistical college football performances in history happened under Bud Wilkinson. And then they go through like a little 8-year interregnum where they have three guys. They have Gomer Jones. Who's official at Wikipedia?
What?
Gomer Jones.
Yeah.
Who's like, Gomer at one point is like offered an NFL gig and he's like, nope, I'm staying here in Oklahoma. And they fire him a year later.
Yep.
His official.
It's nice to know that we've always been like this.
That's Gomer's Iliad right there.
Yeah.
God damn you, Ryan.
Gomer's official Wikipedia page.
It's a very
page.
Short trip. Well, guess it's over.
Iliad, Oklahoma.
Hell no, I ain't getting on that boat.
They got a great collection.
It sure was
there.
Odd to see.
They did give me a lovely golden fleece on the way out the door.
Yeah, I burned my boat. If by that you mean my Cadillac.
I live in Oklahoma.
So they go through three coaches, including Chuck Fairbanks, and then they get Barry Switzer in 73. He's there for another 15 years. That's good and steady. And then the most recent, like, weird period, there's the 5-year Gary Gibbs period, which isn't terrible but isn't great. But then they have two coaches in a row who are real bad, one of whom pains me to say, Howard Schnellenberger, not
top form Howard Schnellenberger. There's a lot of rumors about Howard Schnellenberger in 95 coming in being like, he comes in and he says, they're going to like write stories about the legends that we create here. And they're like, coach, your drink smells. You need to put more Coke in it so we can't smell it.
So then he left to conclude his epic legend ballads at Florida Atlantic, and somewhere more appreciative of such smells. Literature. Yeah.
That is correct. Then
and where everything smells a little like rum anyway. So. Oh, my
Fit
God.
Right in.
Did you guys see the story about the anti-woke bank?
Yes. Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Okay.
Yes, it did.
Sorry. I only thought about it because they mentioned places that were more appreciative of drinking at work. No, really. That's part of the story. The guy who's the rich dude who founded the bank whose house they were working out of.
Yeah.
They, oh God, I forget the direct quote, but there had been multiple complaints apparently about him drinking on the job. And when the Wall Street Journal called him for comment about this, he was like, I think what I do in my own home after 5 p.m. is beneath the interest of the Wall Street Journal.
It was the 5 that really stuck it, because you know, yes! It's 5:02. It's
very specific.
Time for some chaps.
Very specific.
Like, is that not the most 1962 attitude to be like, 5:01, trashed?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go.
Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of a meeting. Don't care. It's 5:03. I'm already late.
If you didn't want me drunk, you should have scheduled it for 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Next train leaving for Moonshine Station. Toot toot.
I think I'd be okay with the boss being super drunk if he made train noises.
Listen, if you're gonna make up a mythical place called Moonshine Station, I want to work there.
I want a vacation there, idiot.
Where do you work? Moonshine Station.
That's where the trams at West Virginia sleep at night.
I want to be stationed there. I will defend it.
Is this like Thomas and Friends, but with knives and federal charges?
I founded the Moonshine Station Militia.
West Virginia, Thomas the Tank Engine.
Here comes Gordon. He has a knife.
Thomas the Coal Train.
On the big rock. On the big rock, Fod. Come out.
Okay, you know the original version of Big Rock Candy Mountain is like drunk as hell, right?
Yes, it's essentially like Pleasure Island for drifters,
for railroad hobos.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And it mentions the lack of police. That's like in Railroad Bulls. That's like the first.
The Railroad Bulls are blind. The jails are made. Oh, in the Big Rock Candy Mountain, all the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out of them as soon as you're in.
How is this not West Virginia's fight song?
Boy,
too many verses.
Let me tell you what an EPA like super fun site Big Rock Candy Mountain universe is.
You're gonna say Big Rock Candy Mountain University?
Like honestly, some of
which
it
is
sounds,
also a problem.
Some of it
crushed
sounds real
OSHA
cool.
Inspectors skull with rock.
A rock.
First
of candy.
All, first of all, Rock Candy Mountain posits the existence of cigarette trees. An amazing concept. Brett Bielema, I could use one of those on Saturday nights.
The more you keep talking about it, the more I'm sure that this is in West Virginia.
All right, there's lemonade
possibly
springs.
Possibly Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Lemonade springs, which ants. The bulldogs all have rubber teeth. I'm fascinated by this concept.
They still bite.
So they can just gum you for their own pleasure.
Right. They would still bite. Rubber can be very hard. This would still hurt a lot.
I'm still bad with dogs, just to be clear.
So basically, these are dogs for riot police.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
In the Big Rock Candy
to avoid
Mountain,
accountability with civilian oversight.
Boy,
there's rubber teeth to attack dogs, Your Honor.
In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come trickling down the rock.
That part, yes. Isn't there like a lake of gin?
No, it's worse. There's a lake of stew.
Oh God, that's worse.
I can't think of anything more disgusting.
Yum yum.
They don't specify whether it's hot or cold.
It's definitely beef stew.
It's just a big lake of rancid
don't
beef stew.
Don't ask what kind of meat it is. That's the point of stew.
I'm going to roll around in it. Drown me in the stew lake.
This was written by a guy who's just been drinking his own urine this for also like 30 posits extra the days hallucinating.
This also posits the existence of Stu jet skis.
This is basically what you're describing is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but for divorced dads.
It gets worse. There's worse.
And another lake of whiskey, too.
There, that one, yeah.
So there's just corpses, because you get out the middle of the whiskey lake, yeah.
I could have sworn gin was in there somewhere.
Yeah, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again. Yeah, and they hung the jerk that invented work.
Oh, boy.
This is the labor uprising right here.
This is how bad the situation was and how bad capital was toward labor in the 20s that they're like, I'm going to go ahead.
Was.
Which 20s?
I'll drown myself in a lake of stew.
Because that's what Karl Marx would do.
I want a tree that just spits out cancer sticks. Cigarette tree would be quite an investment, though, right? You know.
So speaking of Nebraska, no, they don't have mountains. Sorry.
Yeah.
A big flat candy mountain.
It's the Candy Mountain Flats.
And a cave full of fullbacks.
Did we or did we not have?
There's
hazard
a retention pond full of chowder.
Sorry,
and some chili full of donuts. It's a local Dr. C.
You're just back to Nebraska again. Yeah, yeah. You just went right back to Nebraska.
Just one dragon that craps out cinnamon rolls, and another one that belches up chili.
whoever can mate these dragons is the chosen one. The one who will be able to claim Tom Osborne's sword.
Which is a gun.
I love it. In a safe.
Kevin Steele perks up. Mm?
Kevin Steele's a hero, by the way, for being part of not one but two amazing coaching soap operas that he was part
is
of.
Is that the word we want to
There's
use?
Like gonna, three at this point.
At least
Andy's on the Miami staff now.
Oh man, he's the opposite of Ted Roof. Stop you invite Ted Roof in, good vibes.
Ted Floor,
he'll take the blame. You invite Kevin Steele in, you get instant drama. He just brings a telenovela with him.
Kevin Steele walks in your office and instantly your toilet is backed up. He hasn't even gone in there.
It's a gun. He put a gun in there.
By the time you go fix it, he is sitting in your chair with his nameplate on your desk.
Well,
he was watching The Godfather, but he fell asleep and got the wrong idea about hiding the gun in the toilet.
I licked everything on the desk. It's mine now. You still want it?
I got strep throat. You better get out of here.
He would get out of my office. Throat person.
Thank you for inventing the idea of stupid Godfather, where instead of hiding the gun in the toilet,
stupid
like
Godfather
tape,
is just the Godfather.
Where stupid Godfather, they're all eating their pasta with their hands at that scene, right? The cop's facing the wrong way. Michael goes into the bathroom, and the gun is literally in the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
He's like, gotta fish it out of there.
I think is stupid Godfather Goodfellas?
No.
Is that no.
Opposite.
No. Stupid is as a term of endearment.
Godfather is stupid Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I'm using the word stupid as the highest compliment here.
Right.
Okay.
Like Goodfellas is one of the greatest movies ever. I've never been able to pay attention to Godfather.
Yeah.
This is the correct, I mean, opinions are subjective, but this is objectively a correct opinion.
Yeah.
Anyway, when Nebraska keeled over in the garden and died.
That's right. When Nebraska shoved an entire.
Nebraska can't grow tomatoes like that.
When they went to the Orange Bowl, stuffed an entire orange down their throat, choked on it, and died.
Is this a good Cocaines. Time to bring up the true story that I did that in the fifth grade?
Stuffed an entire orange?
Yes.
Into your mouth?
Yes.
You decided to see if you were a boa constrictor?
Yes.
How did that go?
Not great. It turns out that if you leave it sitting on your lips for long enough, the citric acid can actually give you a chemical burn.
Ah!
Anyway, I'm alive. I don't know how either.
You've survived a lot.
Most of it of my own doing.
I don't know if that's better or worse.
It's
just
worse.
Different. It's just different. Anyway, so why are we talking about Oklahoma again?
because we're talking about Nebraska.
Okay, yeah, sorry, we were talking about Nebraska, which brings up, you know, their natural comparison of Oklahoma, who happens to be very bad right now. Okay. Unlike football. Successful, healthy Nebraska. Mm-hmm.
Successful,
dominating, healthy Nebraska, dominating, if you will, in interim coach land.
I feel like you had a point like 45 minutes ago that none of us
did.
I'm not any closer to buying it, but I do feel better about Nebraska.
I'm so glad we got to learn about the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Can't spell that without OU.
Ryan, I know the question we wanted to ask Spencer.
Yeah.
Okay, Spencer, look at me.
Mm-hmm.
Look directly at me, no screens.
Yes.
All right. What week of the season is it right now?
It's week 6.
Yes!
Yeah?
We got them, folks.
Is it week 6?
No.
What is it, week 7?
No. Yes.
Okay.
So remember, some teams are already 6-0.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Oklahoma, but some.
No. Not far from it.
Oklahoma.
I mean, closer than Nebraska, but far from it.
That's true.
He's looking at me with this look of quiet, with this air of quiet woundedness. We'll try this again next week.
I actually don't feel bad about this. I'm like, that's fine. It's close enough.
I know you don't. You were really confident about that one, though. You, like, went right for it.
Betty's my advocate here.
Betty is disappointed.
Yeah, the other thing too is that they don't have a quarterback, got a quarterback injured, and they're short on that side. So like that's how they're so bad. In short, just want to be like, hey, that's why they're so bad. Are they gonna stay bad? Is it serious panic time? I do think you should kind of panic. I think that's what Ted Roof's there. He's there to get fired. Right? Like he's 100% there to get fired. But like they'll look better next year because the talent is still coming in. Right? They still have a ton of good players. They're going to get more good players. Everybody at Oklahoma still wants to be good at football. It's not like you've had some sort of like seismic shift where like, no, we've decided we're a basketball school now. No.
I mean,
they have not done that.
Players might leave, you know, players do that. A lot of them did this last time around before even seeing how it went. So I don't know. And the schedule's going to get really hard in a couple years.
Why would that be, Jason? What's
going to happen? I think they're going to honor their commitment to the Big 12 for many, many years to come. And, you know, then they'll see what happens. I was on team panic for Oklahoma fans even before reading Bill C's post this week about, like, the teams that are collapsing so quickly that Vegas cannot keep up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the historical comps for Oklahoma in that regard are like some of the worst.
I saw Wazoo Paul Wolf in there.
Right, yeah. It's some of the absolute most hopeless situations you can remember from from this millennium. Oklahoma is right in the mix. And as Ryan pointed out Saturday night, the loss to Texas there was nothing fluky about it. 49-0, if you look at the stats, is what the score should have been. If I'm an Oklahoma fan, I'm either panicking or I don't know, watching the Cowboys.
If you remember from earlier in the season, from right before the season, and then again in week one, when actually, never mind, this is kind of funny now, but when Ole Miss and Tennessee were both in the top 10 of preseason S&P Plus, and Bill C couldn't figure out how to get them out of the top 10, this is the opposite problem of that.
Yeah. In this past 3 games for a once ranked team over the last 30 years, the 5th worst is Oklahoma 2022. They have been 98 points under. 2005 Colorado, 99.5 points under. 1999 UCLA, which was a full 101.5 under. Then that's followed up by Texas Tech in 2011. 107 points under, and Texas in 1997. The worst, it gets worse. The comparison for the largest underachievement for a first-year coach. I'm just going to read the names, not the actual, you know, sums. Ron Dickerson from 93 Temple. Remember when Temple was actually kicked out of the Big East? We're talking that era. Paul Wolf at 08 Washington State, Brent Venables, 22 Oklahoma, worse than Paul Wolf in 2008 at Wazoo, and then Vic Kenning at Wyoming, Brian Knorr at 2001 Ohio, and a real bad comparison, 2010 Turner Gill at
Kansas.
Ouch.
But all those situations turned around, right?
No. No, they didn't.
For someone.
For the next coach, yeah. So
I have a maybe slightly more boring answer.
Hit me.
Which I think a lot of why coaches do or don't succeed quickly at like big name programs like Oklahoma has a lot to do with like the environment they find themselves in when they parachute, like when they make that jump. Mm-hmm. These are the other coaches who were active in the Big 12 when Lincoln Riley had his first season when he went 12-2. Obviously, like a much smoother transition, and you don't have transfer nightmare and you know all this other shit. You've got Gary Patterson at TCU. They're still a solid squad at that point, going 11-3. Mike Gundy's obviously at Oklahoma State. Matt Campbell is starting to break through at Iowa State. They go 8-5 that year. It's Bill Snyder at Kansas State at that point, but that's like, I want to say, yeah, that's his penultimate year, and that's definitely not like the peak Snyder years by any means. It's Tom Herman at Texas. It's Dana Holgorsen, like, winding up his last few years at West Virginia. Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, David Beatty at Kansas, and Matt Rhule at Baylor when Baylor was, you know, at the bottom football-wise, certainly. And, like, most of these programs, with the exception, like, there are maybe a handful of exceptions here, but it's, like, the early returns, at least on a lot of especially the new hires in this conference, like the coaching is just good. There aren't that many cheap and easy wins you can get. I think this tends to explain a lot of, like, you know, when Auburn is good or bad, or when Florida is good or bad, or when, you know, even when Kentucky or Vanderbilt, like when they have their like good, their super good years, it kind of lines up when, oh, these other schools are having some big problems. Like, you kind of need that balance. It's a lot harder to do when it's like, yep, you're new, and everybody else is on their game.
Ryan, I think you're definitely onto something. I'm looking at 2017, Lincoln Riley's first year, and the computer composite, the Big 12 was the fourth best conference that year, according to dozens of different computers all thrown together. This year, according to the same metric, the Big 12 is currently the best conference.
Well, at least he's moving to an easier one.
Yeah, so I take it back. The difficulty will finally alleviate itself once you get to play Alabama more. And because, I mean, shit, they're pretty bad by Texas standards. They barely beat two Texas teams that aren't even the best Texas team.
Yeah, by the way, next year's schedule, just to start off for Oklahoma, in case you go, well, I'm right, you know, how fast is the mob coming? Next year's schedule to start. Arkansas State, SMU, and Tulsa. Good start. Brilliant. Wow. That's exactly how you want to do it. Give me some breathing room.
God. The problem is, if you don't go 3-0, like... Yeah, okay.
They don't know. There is no institutional memory of how to do this, right?
Sure.
Old Yeller is a very new story for them. Unlike for some fan bases who every 3 years have to go, I'll do it, Paul.
I also think that is maybe a small bit. I don't think it's the majority of the reason why. I think that is a small element of why there is no actual heat on Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. I think Iowa looks around and is like, being on that particular roller coaster, that sucks. Like, having to hire somebody. Oregon has not had a good time since Chip Kelly left. And Oregon tried to do the, like, well, we'll just, you know, retain internal talent and sort of keep everything rolling. And oh, God. And oh, God. And now, now and we can't keep coaches. You know, it's just like there is the devil you know quality to some, to this, for some programs.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, Iowa's a funny one because it feels like how much longer can this go on? They did win 10 games last year. Like,
sure. Kirk said so.
They're winning percentage.
Offense was
well
fucking terrible that year, too.
Yeah, it that part never matters. Like, their winning percentage for the past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Like, they win a lot of games. It's awful. He'll stay.
I think the main thing for me is, like, and this is the thing I never understand. If you're going to bail, if you're going to rip the Band-Aid off, and whether or not that's a good decision, like, is entirely situational, what is the next thing you're going to do? Like, this to me is ultimate... yeah, fair. But like Louisville, if you're going to fire Scott Satterfield, which apparently beating Virginia buys you more time, like what happens next? Wisconsin, I think, has actually handled this really well because they have like, I cannot remember a time this has happened before where a school has said, this is the interim, and almost officially said, he is auditioning for the job.
Yeah.
But like, that is a plan. And a lot of schools will just be like, ah, we fucking hate you. We don't want a dad. Ah, shit, we need one.
Wisconsin has like, if you get Lance Leopold, great. If you don't, you got this guy who's kind of already like younger.
Yes.
The guy you had, and yes, maybe a little more forward thinking, like Wisconsin.
Who you also like want to affirmatively keep, who you're not just like retain. It's not just like, oh, you're here, and therefore we have to give you the job. Like as stupid and as kind of fucked up as the Manny Diaz situation was at the end of last year, where he's like still the coach but not the coach, it was a form of a plan. It was a very sloppy plan, and whether it will work out or not is, I think, a little bit in doubt right now. But like, what does Oklahoma do if they're just like, nope, Brent Venables ain't it? What happens next?
Bob Stoops, $30 million a year. Did they go
the return?
Did they go hire one of the other Stoopses and hope they remember which one is the good one?
I mean, this is, you have to remember.
Go get the one that we haven't tried yet. Go get Ron.
Go get Ron Stoops.
New Stoops just dropped. The one who I think it's Ron Drinker, the one who I thought had the best job of all, who had their dad's old high school job. Am I making this up, or was there one
really
that did that?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
this
no,
person
this,
you're
yeah,
talking
I think
about
that's,
is
I think
real.
That's...
I trust you.
I don't think
I don't think anyone knows the whereabouts of all the Stoops. Like, everyone just knows a few of them.
It's important to practice Stoops awareness of the ones that are on our radar.
The thing people forget about, like Iowa in particular, like, okay, so who would Oklahoma go and get? I don't know, but they have a real fear of how far the bottom could fall out.
Sure.
A place like Iowa, they've only had two coaches since 1979.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Two.
Right. We're looking at, we talked about this a little bit over the weekend. We're talking about like the Oregon conundrum, right?
Right. Like what do you, like, where is the bottom? How much are you scared of that?
But do you think Iowa has even had that discussion? Do you think there is a piece of paper or a document somewhere that is like, if even if it just like Kirk Ferentz retires and we're not fucking giving the job to Brian, like, is there a list?
It's, and this is completely unquantifiable, and it's possible that the Iowa fans that we know are just preternaturally chill.
Yeah.
But it also, there also seems to be, this does not seem to be a fan base in revolt, and if they are in revolt, they're being kind of subtle about it.
Do we just
know really laid back Iowa fans?
I have seen a lot more Iowa, like,
I mean,
whereas,
I don't know people who are happy, but like, think about the fan bases that we are coming from.
Yeah.
And the, like, the weird shit that would be going on in our own college towns if we were in this position.
The shift that I have seen, at least on Twitter, which is not real, is whereas last year you'd get a lot of like, listen, Iowa's good. Just because they're not good in the way that you like doesn't mean you have to. They're a good team. All right. So why don't you show them some fucking respect? Has
well,
now
the
shifted.
The win total last year was a fair point.
Sure.
I think.
But now that has shifted into, Jesus, enough of this bullshit, please.
I think you have to compare them to, if you're like comparing them to an SEC fan base, you have to make sure it's a fair comp. Like, you can't compare them to like what would be happening at Alabama if they were 3-3. If Kentucky after a 10-win season is 3-3, there's no riots, but they're pretty unhappy about it. And like, if even a 10-win team looks like a 3-win team, then I mean, I think they seem especially unhappy by Midwestern standards.
Who is the Iowa of the SEC at this point?
Kentucky. In every way.
Kentucky. Yeah. I can see it and I can't.
It's what? A team that seeks to be competitive.
Kentucky's too happy to be Iowa right now.
They're going to win ugly. They're totally fine with winning ugly. Right? Extremely ugly if necessary.
I guess I'm having trouble seeing the comparison because Kentucky's pretty happy right now.
Yes.
I get in the moment. I think long term.
Okay.
Right, like,
yeah,
zoom,
give them
like if
10
we zoom
more
out.
Years of like oh man, we beat this team. That means our expectations go up, right?
Yeah.
posit a box. This box plus time. Yeah. If we put
Kentucky is still getting used to being good. Kentucky remembers how bad it could be. Take away that memory and how happy are they? You know what I mean?
Because Iowa fans don't remember like the last winning season they had prior to Hayden Fry's arrival in 1979 was 1961. They had to go all the way back to 61 until you could find a winning record. Like, how low is the bar there? How bad can it get? It can get terrible for decades at a time.
But does that even apply in modern, do any of these old patterns and histories, do they mean anything in 2022 because of how roster construction is different and recruiting is different and how, isn't everything different? Isn't it a lot harder to sort of stay in the base? Kansas is the obvious example. Duke is no longer, think of all these schools that in the last, 5 years have been nope, not going to stay down there. There are not that many schools that just live in the basement anymore.
Negligence never sleeps. It's always in fashion, and someone is going to pick it up.
Which also means there are not many schools that live in the penthouse for very long.
Right?
Oklahoma, you were guaranteed a spot there for decades. You just not now.
Yes, that is the trade-off, I think. But I think if you're just saying you could go back to constantly struggling to make bowl eligibility, it's I don't think that's true anymore. I think there is enough figured out at this point that really any program with a base level of resources, if they do just the right number of things, they don't have to be amazing, can more or less do what Wake Forest has done over the last few years. Wake Forest is not going to make the playoff, and I don't think anybody expects them to, but Wake Forest is not going to go 1-11.
Or they can run for they could have all the resources and be Texas most of the time.
Yeah, we have several current ongoing runs of uninterrupted mediocrity that I can count off to you right now.
Okay.
At big schools, Florida, USC, Texas.
Florida went to an SEC title game Florida's 2 years ago.
Yeah, Florida's
stealing valor.
No, right? Because this is where you're wrong. Because yes, Florida is not what it used to be. But to call Florida a mediocre program.
Yeah, that's spoiled.
Spoiled baby bullshit.
But I will take it. You know what? I think there was...
Sorry, how many national titles have you had this millennium?
Anyway, moving on. Point seeded trial proceeds.
Miami is the better example in the state.
Or Nebraska.
Florida State.
Say Miami, because that way it pisses off Florida fans who want to suffer to someone to acknowledge there's grand suffering, mm-hmm. and it pisses off Miami fans because the Kane dynasty will never ever end. You hate her.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretend that instead of barking, I did a homophobic slur.
But really big schools that keep mismanaging.
That dog's going to hell.
All of this, you can go down a little bit. You could go down a slight tier and find even worse examples, like Arizona State. Arizona State, just a lot of upside, a lot of potential, and they just keep spitting the bit. They just won't get.
I
on
don't
board.
Even think that is true. I don't. I don't.
Okay,
think that's
listen.
True.
The examples
no, no,
of
let,
gross...
hang on. Let Ryan rebut, and then let's structure this for a second. Let Ryan rebut, and then you come back.
Okay, I got it.
All right. I'm gonna pull up Arizona State's sports reference
18
page.
18 bitches.
Fucking load. Okay, 2013, 2014, back to back 10-win seasons. One of them ends with a win in the Sun Bowl. Both ended ranked in the top 25. This is not the mark of a mediocre program. We can have the separate discussion about what the Pac-12, especially the Pac-12 South, looked like in 2013 and 2014. But
programs are great.
This is a team.
Hang on, let him finish.
This is a team that has been to, let me count, 9 bowl games in its last 12 seasons. And one of those obviously was a COVID year where they didn't go to any bowl game. This is not. I have a problem saying that an Arizona State, which by location and history does not have a right to be significantly better than this, that this is a mediocre team.
It's more the epic history of mismanagement there that really makes me think that there is an artificial cap on what they could be.
by them constantly making hires that nobody else would make.
Okay.
For instance, the time that they recently just squandered, not only hiring Herm Edwards, but letting Ray Anderson be their athletic director.
I gotta say, there aren't too many instances in all of the sport history where you could say a hire that nobody else would make, and it's not hyperbole. That's one.
But this is what I mean. Herm Edwards, everything you're saying is right, and this is what is also true. Herm Edwards went 26-20. So the idea that it's really hard to drive a program all the way into the ditch at this point. There are still enough things you can do right that you can be like, yes, we can sort of like keep it from taking on water aggressively.
When there's enough, I really don't want to get into like the State Department of it all, but there's enough institutional structure at a lot of these places where it's really tricky to dismantle it on the fly, even if you're trying to.
Sure.
Yeah. And in addition to that, before they got Herm Edwards, mm-hmm. before we even
it was fine.
The Todd Graham concert experience, yes, was mostly fine.
Who was in terms of football games, pretty good.
Todd, it's Brittany Bitch Graham.
Todd Graham has a legitimate case as Arizona State's best coach of the 21st century.
This might be the first time limited. That anybody has ever used those words in the same sentence.
Right.
Sure.
And he was fine. But then they
get a legitimate case to assume that Todd Graham is patient zero.
Yeah. But you have like they spent the rest of the 2000s on Dirk Cutter and Dennis Erickson.
Yeah.
You know, like, come on, man. That's
everyone's employed Dirk Cutter at some point.
And Dennis Erickson.
We all have to take a turn.
And Dennis Erickson. That's true. Actually, fair. Dennis Erickson is on this podcast right now.
The Arizona State Sun Devils are the Chargers of college football.
The length of those two Wikipedia bios is just sprawling and continuing.
Yeah. They really
it's like
are
the
run
Incredible
like
Hulk just wandering across the country.
It's like movie credits.
How many animators are on this Arizona State staff?
We didn't even know what it was going to look like. They just told us. They just told us Rudy Carpenter, like Thanos
dissolves,
fight, and just told us dissolves.
You see the name of a song? I didn't even hear that. They paid money for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Goddamn.
Yep.
They really are run like a team, like an NFL team, in that they expect the checks to come whether they're good or not.
Yes.
Right.
But,
like.
But here's the fucked up thing. Who has had the better last 10 years? Arizona State or Nebraska?
Damn.
I already know the answer.
I know. Like, this is... I hear what you're saying.
You're not asking enough of our beloved Sun Devils, is what I'm saying.
So
you need to ask your son to get off the couch and get a job, Ryan.
ASU made one bad hire.
The real reason why I think you have this, like, eroding upper middle class, let's call it, mm-hmm. in college football, where it is, like, these segments of, like, there are the Ohio State, Bama, Georgia's, and then there's like the kind of interesting thin layer beneath them that's like, hey, you'll get the fourth playoff spot. It won't go great. Have fun. And then there's everybody else who's like, you're 8-4 and therefore you suck. I think it's just like recruiting change. I looked at this recently. If you look at the 1992 Alabama roster and you see where did the players come from, it's like, I think it was like 2/3 Bama, the state of, 1/3 somewhere else. And the somewhere else was mostly like, places near Alabama. If you go look at like one of the more recent championship rosters, that ratio has almost flipped. Recruiting has changed in such a fundamental way over the last 20 plus years that this is no, like, if you are Arizona State, you can't assume that you can like put a wall up around any recruit. And that wasn't true in the 90s. In the 90s, you could say like, okay, as long as we like don't fuck up, we have a good chance of keeping our best players in state. It didn't always happen. There's a running back who played for Northwestern who's from, what was his name? This is going to bother me. Doesn't matter. But yeah, I think that has changed things in such a big way where it's like, no, it's no longer like, hey, here are the high school players who play in your area. And it's just like, no, you just get fucking picked apart by the bigger dinosaurs. Enjoy the scraps.
And then whoever you do get, they might find a better opportunity and good for
you. Yes, 100%.
Not reflective of any other larger trends in society or the economy.
Nope.
I did have one haunting thought while considering teams that underperformed and are probably mismanaged in the name of stability. You know what school cranks out a top 10 amount of NFL talent and buy draft picks and yet has only two division titles since, say, 2010 to show for it? That'd be Penn State.
Okay.
It's a hard division.
It is a very hard division.
It's a difficult spot. But just pointing that out. Just going to let that little bit of discomfort.
You cannot do anything funnier than I think it was John U. Bacon this week, who basically put the Penn State coaching seat in play, even though Penn State is undefeated this year. It's like Matt Rhule got fired. So James Franklin needs to watch
out. Penn State, which lacks the stability of Michigan
and Carolina Panthers football.
Sorry, I stand
Michigan,
behind...
where our coach tried to leave 6 months ago.
I stand behind my good friend John Bacon and this extremely solid take. I don't care. This is an emotional. This is Michigan's version of an emotional truth, which is why we had trouble recognizing it. That's all.
Like, what a hell!
I would like it if James Franklin left. I understand you would like it.
Yeah, no, it'd be good. Life would be way easier for you.
What a hell life James Franklin must live in this specific regard. That even when Penn State is good and successful, there are people who are like, they're gonna get fuck. He's gone. He's dead. He's already.
Like, they see six on the other side. Instantly,
when they're two and four. They say James Franklin to the USC job. Whoa, yes. This rumor will hurt him in recruiting. God damn, man. I understand y'all want rid of him, but
I think we fully established nothing will hurt James Franklin. Nothing.
No. He's not fucking leaving, no matter how much you'd like
him.
Watch him leave now.
Yeah, watch it.
Panther's job is open.
It is 3:33. It is 3:33 on Tuesday, October 11th, just for the record. If anybody wants to start a stopwatch.
I love the idea of James Franklin having, he's like very like, I love you guys and that stuff. Like him having to say he loves the fucking Carolina Panthers with all his soul.
Him trying to do the little cat noise.
Happy birthday, Christian McCaffrey. Who by that
when I did? Look at Sir Big Purr, my heart swells. Huge.
I
want
to kiss him. I want to kiss him on the mouth.
When I look at the testicle-less panther out front of our, what's the name of our stadium again? Pank Bark Field.
I want y'all to pack the bank lobby this
Barking
week.
Barking Cat Arena.
We are going to have one of our beloved Charlotte traditions this week. We are going to do a teal out.
Everybody come on down to the Belk.
So I drove from Charlotte this morning and passing through.
Oh, so you heard him.
You see this gigantic billboard.
Hey, folks, Spencer can exclusively confirm that James Franklin was seen in Charlotte.
We're bringing Derek Anderson back to remind us of the greatness of Panthers teams gone by.
Their billboard in Charlotte is just a gigantic can of Miller Lite, and it says, Go Panthers.
Okay, that's amazing.
Just beer.
How Midwestern is that?
They should.
That's almost word for word a Bill Hicks joke about the future of advertising from like 30 years ago.
They just did
If he takes the Panthers job, he should bring Jimmy Clausen to do the Chad Powers.
When he takes the Panthers job,
he should bring Jimmy Clausen to do the Chad Powers thing that Eli did, just so we can see Jimmy Clausen like airmail out.
Jimmy Clausen is at the combine. Is that what? Or he's at like UDFA day, and they're like, get this dork out of here.
Jesus.
So hey, quick question. Terrible. I know it's been there for a minute, but how do you think who had to explain the Chad Powers thing to James Franklin, and how do you think that went?
Oh, James Franklin is online enough that, and also like online in a like 4 years ago way that he's like, I saw this fake Tom Brady face recently, and I think it was very effective.
Oh, you think it was his idea?
I think in James Franklin's mind, this is, you know who loves watching the Manning cast? 16-year-old football players.
They also love Mission Impossible movies.
I mean, they should.
What if we should combine these things?
This is the man who at a Vanderbilt practice saw that I was wearing green pants and goes, "Are you Irish?"
I forgot about that.
Well, are you? Oh, speaking of,
you should have said Northern Irish and thrown a smoke bomb at him.
Speaking of, we have neglected this. The Rutgers Scarlet Knights have returned some a different kind of I word American pride.
I thought you were going to say they returned some stolen relics.
With the reascension of Nunzio Campanile.
Nunzio!
To the throne in Pescadaway.
Pesca meaning fish, and Attaway meaning I threw it over there.
Attaway. So, we should just mention that and note that.
Spencer, can we ask you some questions that the listeners submitted that we haven't let you see?
Yes.
First of all, what week of the season is it? No, let's try it again.
Week 6.
No, dude.
I'm not changing my answer.
Stick to your guns. Stick to your guns.
I know it's week 7, but here.
Let's... Yeah, now?
No, yeah.
It doesn't count.
Plant your
okay,
feet.
Wait.
Plant your feet to make them come to you.
That's new plan. Nice. New plan. How long do you think we could convince him it's a different week of the season?
Pretty not easily. Now. Don't even not think now. About it too
well, long. I'm thinking hard.
Yeah.
It'll eventually be week 6 again.
This That's question true. Comes from Matt Brown.
It's week 6 in the Azores. That's how that works, right?
Yeah.
Publisher, creator of Extra Points, our old buddy. Spencer, how do I get rid of butt wink when I squat?
What is butt wink?
That's also my question. I assume it's when you squat and your butt sort of pops out the top of your shorts.
It is. Oh. Nobody. That's just plumber's crack.
We don't need that's what, okay, that's what that. I thought.
Right,
what
is just plumber's
butt. Butt wink is when you overextend.
This is something worse.
Is when you overextend the squat past the knees and the butt kind of winks down. And there's some concern about tension under weight that you are going to, take weight away from what you want to emphasize, which are the glutes, the quads, right? And you're going to put too much weight on your knees.
Oh, that's
and a
much
lot of
less
stuff
interesting
you don't want to
than
do.
What I thought it was.
So the way to eliminate butt wink is to simply do a little video check. It helps, okay? Find a good spot, a good cue to keep you parallel. And then don't necessarily go any deeper than that. Because, yes, you want to achieve depth on a squat. You don't want to do partials. They don't work for most people. But seriously.
Can you practice doing it over like a set of yoga blocks or something?
So yeah,
until
you're
hitting the correct depth?
One great way to do that is to do box squats, which is to find a good sturdy box that you can keep and put under your butt. Like literally take it down, put the weight on your butt, and then get back up. These are a great exercise.
It's my butt wink box.
These are a great thing because it will help you establish depth, like the right depth, and it will also really help you get out of the hole if you have trouble getting out of the hole. Like if that's where your squat fails is coming out of the hole, that is a great tool for avoiding
it's
that.
My
so there,
squat
that's
hole
my
box.
That's my very serious answer to how to avoid butt wink. By the way, a little bit of butt wink, a little bit, like if you do the video check and you're seriously not doing it that much, a little bit's okay if you're not experiencing any pain.
Honey, come out to the garage and see if my butt is winking.
That's literally what he should do. Yeah.
Also, if your butt wink looks nice, you have an Instagram account.
We Correct. Know several sports writers who will be interested in that
Just
content.
Go ahead and post it.
next question. This
episode is brought to you by yogamommies.biz.
At One Dishwasher asks, uncles or aunties?
I'm not going to choose, so quit asking.
This is the most stumped he's ever been. Damn.
Why would I do that? You know, I will say this politically and in terms of long-term benefit, you really do want aunties over uncles because those uncles are just going to kill themselves in ATV wrecks, right? Uh-huh. Aunties, they're going to be there. So if I was forced at gunpoint to choose aunties over uncles.
At gunpoint, huh?
Holly and Jason, if you have ones, you can throw them in here as well.
Uncles aren't going to fix you a plate.
Okay, this is from at Seltzer Mom. Go Bills. Spencer, how do we know if we're living our finite days of consciousness on this earth right? Before the end, do we find out if we were right or wrong?
God, that's a great Bills question for right now.
That is an excellent Bills question. You won't. Stop worrying about it.
That's it?
That's it. Stop worrying about it.
Be okay. grateful that he gave a short answer.
Truth is in the doing.
Okay, so. This is from at Jack the Rabbit. Spencer, what's the deal with baseball?
No.
What do you mean no?
No.
baseball correct. Has been giving us a lot the past couple of weeks.
I get it.
I do think
it's funny. It's funnier as a gift than as an experience.
I do think, I will say,
that's why I
do
say
think
it's been giving us a lot.
It is very funny to me that the playoffs, which are like this fucking money machine for every other sport, where they're like, let's make more of them, let's put them on TV more. Baseball is like, Tuesday at noon, the perfect time for some playoffs. You hate money, you stupid idiots. Okay,
it's a training wheel sport.
The sport that treats itself like it's the like Frisco Beach Bowl.
Everybody wears jammies.
Mm-mm. Well, yeah,
child sport, child's imagination. Bosses wear uniforms. Stupid.
You didn't enjoy the 3-run double from the other night?
It's best played when it's bad. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Baseball, I will say, baseball is the best sport where when something goes wrong because nobody knows what to do. Basketball, if like there's a weird bounce or something breaks down, like everybody sort of knows how to react. But baseball mm-hmm. players, I think, are so accustomed to the rhythm of, like, this is what happens on a ground ball. This is what happens with this. And when something goes wrong, it dominoes. That's why you see, like, this error turned into 3. It's fucking great.
If you really want to consume baseball the way it was meant to be played, just set some kind of auto Twitter search for people tagging John Boyce in tweets that say, watching some baseball.
Watching some baseball, yeah.
And there, you're set.
At Dan Morrison 96 asks, are you excited to watch Brian Kelly beat Florida?
No.
That's mean.
No. I don't want good things to happen for him.
Will that mean anything to you at this point?
This year's just, no, I mean, it'll sting a little bit, but this year I've pretty much written off Florida as, you know, your preschool year. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, you guys blocked. Yay. So that's basically where we're at. So it'll only sting a little.
Am I the only one that thinks Florida has this?
I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Who has Florida looked decisively like they have had this year?
It's not so much that as I have the sample size of having watched both of these teams play my own.
Yeah, if I had to pick a winner straight up, I'll take Florida.
I will say this, LSU's been
strong feelings about it.
LSU's been so bad on special teams that if it's a toss-up, I would take Florida.
That's kind of where I was going with this, actually. LSU has been the difference in the scores between the Tennessee-Florida and the Tennessee-LSU games can be chalked up in large part to mistakes made by Tennessee in the Tennessee-Florida game and mistakes made by LSU in the LSU-Tennessee game. And Florida was very game about capitalizing on those mistakes by Tennessee, and LSU appears willing to provide them. This is absolutely all that I'm... Also, I know a lot depends on which Anthony Richardson shows up. But
that's not a bad theory, because that was true of the LSU-Auburn game as well. Is that it's not like LSU didn't fuck up. LSU fucked up plenty. Auburn just didn't do anything about it.
Right. And and this was, you know, this was also... You know, at the end of a hot weather early season rivalry game, and every time Tennessee fucked up in that second half, Florida was there to turn it into points.
Sure.
And LSU appears to be very, very happy to hand those opportunities to you. So I'm not confident that LSU could win this game at all.
Yeah.
At Side Out Par. Spencer delights in scoffing at sacred cows, but what are his? What is Spencer reluctant to treat irreverently?
Oh my, that's too... Who wrote that? That's too serious.
This is a long-time listener.
All right.
Is there anything
where you're like... What are your sacred cows, Spencer?
Is there anything where you're like, no, don't make fun of that?
You know, if I don't have an answer, I don't have an answer. So okay. No, like if nothing came to that, because I think there's a context for making fun of something at every point in the right context. So yeah.
Here's the last one.
But like, I'm not going to punch. I'm not going to like punch down.
Like, all right. I'm going to give you 2 actually before we get off this. Okay. At Snowster SC, driving across the country soon. What is a good book to read in hotels and at rest areas, etc.?
Holly.
Oh, that's a Spencer question. Never mind.
You have your hand up.
I just realized it was a Spencer question. Sorry.
Well, let's see what Spencer says, and then I want to hear it.
Go ahead.
Dude, read Life by Keith Richards.
Yeah,
it's really good. Okay. It's really, really good.
No, go ahead and jukebox about this because you have found some amazing facts in this
book. It's absolutely fantastic. That man shouldn't be alive. Keith Richards is amazing. Keith Richards has a really... I enjoyed it even more when I found out about things he had said in the book and then went and checked him against other accounts of things in the book. For instance, the recording of Exile in Main Street, he says, was a time of great personal discovery and artistic collaboration. This is not everyone else's memory of it. Everyone else is like, Keith was high on heroin and we had to wake him up every morning and he would never show up for things. And in his book, he was like, ah, what a fantastic time.
They should do, they should release dual, every autobiography should come with an unauthorized biography mm-hmm. done by everyone who was around you at the time.
Yeah, no.
And you should be able to sync them up.
Like the other one is...
Like
is,
an annotated version, basically?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
You really should go side by side with Bill Wyman's Rolling with the Stones because you couldn't find two different people than the bass player and guitarist for that band.
The bass player for the Rolling Stones, by the way, quit the band to open up a fish and chip shop called Sticky Fingers. That was his exit plan and his retirement plan was to open up a fish and chip shop.
Yep.
You can't England harder than that. The other suggestion is my perennial go-to, which is I Live to Tell It All by George Jones and Tom Carter. That is the one where George Jones tells, among other stories, one, waking up in the middle of a river in the passenger seat of a car, neck deep in water, with his driver.
On the big rock candy mountain.
In the Stew River. He woke up in a Stew River. Two, he once came to after a cocaine and drinking binge in the middle of Houston in his tour bus, firing a gun into the floor as his driver drove him around. Three, he once came to from a drinking bender, laughing and flushing $100 bills down the toilet of his hotel suite. Those are just three of like 5,000. That's the book where he talks about how gangsters kidnapped him to pay off an insurance policy they'd taken out on him, and they tried to overdose him on cocaine, but they couldn't do it because no amount of cocaine could kill him.
Does he talk about having the invisible monkey friend that he threw off the bus, the tour bus, and then welcomed
Daffy
back
Duck.
On? It was he had a, right. It was a duck, not a monkey. Drank, thank you.
He drank to the
oh,
point.
I thought it was a monkey named Daffy Duck.
I liked it better when it was a monkey named Daffy Duck.
He drank and used coke to the point where he had a dissociative episode that was so long lasting that he named this character who would abuse him and tell him what a piece of shit he was, but in a Donald Duck voice. So imagine George Jones up there singing "He Stopped Loving Her Today" while this thing is like, right? Like,
okay, the last question. This is from at Senor Andy. Does Spencer want the Nebraska job?
You're shitting me. That's not a real question.
It is.
That's beautiful.
No.
Which Nebraska job?
Yeah.
There's lots of big state?
I don't know.
Lots of postings.
I feel like he's committed to what they're building at North Texas.
Is this a corn heist?
Is the Nebraska job.
Oy, love.
No, I don't want it.
Why?
I'm not going to Nebraska.
Why not?
What if you can remote?
If I could remote it, let's talk.
What is the amount of money that you would need to do, I don't know, let's say 1 year at Nebraska? Everyone knows that you're just doing one, then you're not going to get your contract renewed, but you have to be there. You have to like actually do the job.
Market value. So with peer
market value for you?
No, this is the Big Ten West, which is a scam anyway. So I'm going to ask for $8 million. And they're going to pay it because the Big Ten scam prices, and I think most of the big... If I had to, like,
$8 million in my own grove of cigarette trees.
Right. $8 million and a lake full of stew. That's what I'm asking for. And a big cinnamon bone canoe that I can just...
Nebraska friends are in a panic after this episode, folks. They've discovered the cinnamon roll canoes.
And I'm going to give a mil...
How did
I'm gonna
he find
give a
my sex
of...
dream? How?
Bring me the head of Scott Frost. And I will do the job.
$8 million. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, and beheading Scott Frost is your sex dream?
I got to tell you, you would look terrible in Nebraska gear. Like in Nebraska coaching gear, it would not be flattering on you at all.
What if their overalls like the mascot?
Ooh.
See?
Mm-hmm. All right. All right.
And a little.
Oh, dang. Have we been doing this all wrong, insisting that coaches dress like baseball managers dress?
Dressing like mascots instead?
I'm just thinking it could all these weird towel lip reading strategies could be prevented by having the coach wear mascot heads.
Thank you for putting Josh Heupel in the like buckskin musket.
Listen,
that's right, it's breathable.
Gus Malzahn on a golden horse.
This is also making me realize
Mel,
how fucked
Mel Tucker would just have to dress the way he dresses every day.
He would, yeah.
Just put a breastplate over it.
This replacing is also making me realize it's really fucked up that Florida's like, you know, an alligator would wear a sweater.
They would, because they're cold.
Because they're cold.
It makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
That poor thing.
It's not how biology works at all.
That's so Florida.
I went to Florida. What do I know about things?
At that animal and thinking, gosh, it looks so cold.
It's Florida in a couple of different ways. Because on one hand, that, but on the other hand, it's so fucking Yankee-fied to put a lizard in a varsity sweater.
Yeah.
It really is.
Like, what snowboard asshole came up with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to want to be around loud noises and wearing a sweater.
All those mascots, you know, all the, like, sweater and sailor hat logos are super, super old. So, like, yeah, there had to be a juxtaposition, you know, for many decades where, like, people in Texas and Louisiana are like, gosh, our mascot looks sweaty.
We haven't invented air conditioning yet. Anyway, here's the sweatered alligator.
It's disgusting.
I'm so clammy. Shut up.
He's Clarence.
He's trying to make weight for high school wrestling.
Can you imagine how bad that
flyweight?
How bad that LSU tiger smelled in its wool sweater and its sailor hat.
See,
this is actually why they invented mascot pairs and why some schools have like junior mascots or lady mascots. It's not for equality. It's in case one dies on the sideline during the game.
For some purposes.
Some lady showing up in 1932 in Baton Rouge being like, I needed a sweater. Put it on the tag.
You know that's what happened.
That's totally what happened. I made it. They're like, well, you can't be rude to the lady. Why don't you put the sweater on the tiger?
Rude. Can't be rude to Miss Ernestine.
Yeah. Miss Beverly knitted the tiger
it's
a sweater.
Absolutely a Beverly. You're right.
It would be rude.
Beverly vibes.
At no point is like, how fucking insane is that lady that she did a sweater for a tiger? No, we reverse the entire structure of the universe so we don't have to call her nuts.
It's probably also like, we can't let
you've
Mike
just
the
broken
42nd
into a lot
be
of
shirtless
psyches.
In the presence of a lady.
His nipples are horrendous.
Oh, God.
They'll make her flustered.
You understand that means it's a lady tiger. I don't care.
Well, in that case, I can't be in the presence of a shirtless lady.
She should be home.
I can't even be in a business meeting with this lady.
I'm breaking the Billy Graham tiger rule right now.